This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run on BFM 89.9. I'm Melissa Idris with Julian Ng and Ibrahim Sani. Right now, 7:45 on the clock. In 20 minutes, we'll have the breakfast grill. I'll be speaking to Wong Hing Tuck, the CEO of U-Mobile. Very interesting mobile telco player because they're the smallest of the four mobile telco players at the moment, the newest entrant, but and they've kind of positioned themselves as the challenger to the big three, the Maxis, the DG, and the Celcom.
I used to pay over $200 for my my telco company. I won't name the company, but the company is called one of the many companies that many of us actually exited.
One of the three.
One of the
big three.
And now I'm paying 28 ringgit for a 7 gig at U-Mobile. I'm not trying to put a plug on them, but I'm enjoying extensively well done.
No, but that's definitely something I want to ask U-Mobile, if this is a strategy of those to drop prices to kind of entice customers away from the incumbents. We've all heard telco analysts saying that there's a price war going on. If this is a strategy, can U-Mobile continue this strategy as a challenger?
Yeah, is it sustainable, right? I don't think so, but that 28 ringgit.
And the other thing is, with four telco players right now in the market, there's rumours of a new entrant to the market. In fact, not even one, but maybe even two new entrants.
Boy.
So is there space for five? Is there space for six? What is U-Mobile's strategy going to be? Because they were the underdog and the challenger, right? So if there's a new player, what would that mean for their strategy?
Weebee is one of them, right?
That's
under Telecom Malaysia, because
they
want to establish the MVNO. And interestingly, the customers would become the helpline people. You call them up or you put something in the community. The subscribers would answer those helpline questions for you and then in return being rewarded by points to knock off their bill.
What
or
a
something.
Fascinating business model.
Remember we talked about Jeffrey Rushkoff versus Bill Gates as well. I think that's critical, right? Because peer-to-peer helping is the new future. We had Waze yesterday and they were talking about peer-to-peer information. And I think, this whole Weebee, peer-to-peer helpline is going to work.
Another really important point that I would like to raise in the interview with U-Mobile is the fact it's your relationship with Maxis. So U-Mobile currently has an arrangement with Maxis where they leverage off Maxis's network. And if you remember, on the Morning Round, we spoke about it, I think it was last month, where Maxis reported their results. And there was an exodus of customers last year. A million customers left Maxis last year. In the first 3 months of the year, it was already 400,000, if I'm not mistaken.
And one of them is enjoying a 28 ringgit, 7 gig plan right now.
Okay.
I think Maxis must be kicking themselves, because they are the patron. I mean, they are U-Mobile's network is based on Maxis's network, and I guess the next very clear strategy for U-Mobile would be to build their own.
Yeah, so I think that's something to ask, whether that relationship is as happy of a marriage as they claim it to be. So let's find out more on The Breakfast Grill with the CEO of U-Mobile, Wong Hing Tuck. Okay, let's get back to business news of the day. Now, Fitch Ratings yesterday issued a report stating that the recent 1MDB bond default has raised the pressure on Malaysia and that the default could potentially damage the country's government debt rating.
Yeah, so Fitch report issued a report yesterday and it's basically damaging, actually. They say that the 1MDB could potentially damage the country's government debt rating. They say that the defaults basically highlights the ongoing uncertainty of the Malaysia's finances and governance. There's only one good thing that Fitch said yesterday, which is that, quote-unquote, they said that the political instability shows little sign being contributed by 1MDB. But, I think they're basing it from the Sarawak election. And we know that the political stability and sentiment between East Malaysia, the sentiment is very different from that of West Malaysia and that in Sarawak. So in that sense, from the political perspective front, we're kind of okay, but from the finances and governance front, we're terribly bad.
Can I just juxtapose that against SMP's statement that they made? They said that the 1MDB saga has dominated the political discussions in the country for more than a year. But what looms larger, quoting them now, that what looms larger than the potential financial losses related to 1MDB is the threat to Malaysian political stability that makes 1MDB an important development for the government's credit standing. So while Fitch says that there is little sign of 1MDB contributing to political instability, SNP doesn't agree.
Yeah, and I think that this relates to that game of chicken that 1MDB played with IPIC, and 1MDB lost because IPIC was able to engineer a technical default of the bonds, which is leading to the kind of statements that Fitch and S&P are making now, and is shaking the sovereign ratings of Malaysia as well as the ringgit. We've seen the ringgit also weaken in the past few days.
If you prepare all the three reports by Fitch, Moody's and S&P, Moody's and S&P has been making leading statements, and Fitch has been making statements that trails Moody's and S&P. I can easily argue that Fitch is always late to the game in issuing statements, because the statements that they issue now was the same statements that Moody's and S&P issued, let's say, 3 or 4 months ago.
Okay, so there's a second bond interest payment for the bond for 1MDB that's due today, isn't it?
Yeah.
The Edge Financial Daily today reports that ahead of this, markets are bracing themselves. They're expecting some volatility. The ringgit has weakened against the US dollar to close at a 7-week low yesterday, and that is rattling the market a fair bit.
And also the ringgit, actually. So the ringgit fell to 4.05 against the US dollar. So, you know, how can they say that it doesn't affect the market? It does affect the market.
7.51 right now, and a private equity fund managed by CIMB Private Equity and Mitsubishi Corp is believed to have won the bid to take over local supermarket chain Jaya Grocer. This is according to Starbiz.
You know, this is fun, right? Because Jaya Grocer is a supermarket chain that was created by the Tang family, the same family that founded Giant Hypermart, the Tang Mini Market Center. They also own Hero Pasaraya. Of course, Giant and TMC or Tang Mini Market has been sold off. They still own Hero Pasaraya, but it's not clear whether or not the sale of Jaya Grocer that we saw this morning includes the Hero Pasaraya as well.
It looks like the buyer, which is this private equity fund called ASEAN Industrial Growth Fund, is putting all its eggs into one basket, because a few years ago they raised about 130 million US dollars, which is just a touch over half a billion ringgit, and they're spending 300 million ringgit on this. So a major portion of funds spent to buy into Jaya Grocer, and that is, I think, a tremendous vote of confidence, because you would have to really, you're going against the principle of diversification here, putting so much money into one investment and also buying it at quite an expensive valuation of around 30 times.
You know, even though this fund was created 5 years ago, that half a billion ringgit that you mentioned, Julian, this is the first acquisition from this fund, and the investors are mostly from Japan, and then hence that Mitsubishi Corporation tie-up with CIMBPE in buying this company.
Very interesting the way consumers' shopping tastes have kind of changed over the years, especially in urban areas. I don't know about you, but I grew up with the mom and pop shop at the corner, and that's where I got my groceries. Well, our household got our groceries, and you would buy one onion and then you go back and buy one little clove of garlic or whatever, right? And now we tend to do our big grocery shops at big supermarket chains, and I don't think the mom and pop shops
can survive.
You don't
mean big literally, right?
That was not a plug. I said large-scale supermarket.
I still shop at mom and pops because I find that it saves so much more time, and invariably it feels cheaper, because with 100 ringgit it feels like you can buy so much more at the small shops, whereas 100 ringgit doesn't take you that far in shopping, you know, in a mall. But you know, that's not necessarily true, because these hypermarkets are really edging out the mom and pop shops, and it's kind of like a Uber situation in many countries as well. Many countries have regulations against hypermarkets coming into the countries. India is one of those countries where they are worried about, sensitive about displacing the mom and pop shops.
But clearly, I mean, this piece of news goes to show that there's potential for growth here. Consumers are preferring this over, they want to shop in that brightly lit, you know, big aisles and all the amenities, rather than a dark little mini market in the corner, right?
Yeah, and I think you know, this is because Jaya Grocer, I would like to fashion, it's in between that mom and pop small scale versus the
It's not quite a hyper market, right? Yeah.
And everything you can get there could be you know, while it's a little bit above market price, it can be more fresh, and that perhaps that's something that consumers want, and that perhaps contributes to why the pricing is on the high side, because the 300 million ringgit purchase fee that they bought over the 100% ownership of Jaya Supermarket values the company at about 30 times the price to earnings ratio, and much of this contributes to Jaya generating highest free cash flow within the retail sector.
7.55 at the moment. Moving over to Sarawak, where Sarawak Energy is working to secure power purchase deals that will see the company selling electricity to Brunei and Sabah by 2019 and 2020.
Okay, so Sarawak Energy Group CEO, Dato' Thorstein Sorviat, he says that this is the third domicility or the second country that they're selling. This is, of course, following their West Kalimantan sale. So they want to sell or plan to sell 100 megawatts to Brunei, another 100 megawatts to Sabah. And I think the infrastructure is the more important story here on the CapEx, not so much on the plant itself.
Sorry, this is just a small thing, but I interviewed Dato' Thorstein and I practiced his name for days before the interview. Dato' Thorstein Schertzweit.
Schertzweit. Oh, wow. they blew me away. And I think the new transmission lines to transport these new the energy to these new two places will cost a bomb for Sarawak Energy.
But 100 megawatts is really small, very small. Brunei itself, the capacity is the size of an IPP in Malaysia. Mm. So 100 megawatts to each of that is pretty small. I guess Sarawak, it's good for Sarawak because they're just diversifying their customer base.
Mm-hmm. And while this business is quite small, they're raising a large fund right now because there will be a multi-year 15 billion ringgit denominated Sukuk Musyarakah program that will be issued by Sarawak Energy. And I think the bigger question right now is that will there be demand for this type of sukuk in today's day and age? And we just said about the changes of the debt capital risk profile following 1MDB's default. Does that have an impact on the pricing of this sukuk as well?
Well, would you consider Sarawak Energy a state-owned enterprise?
Actually, yeah, I would consider
it. Would you consider them?
Yeah, because the Pelita Group is also a state-owned enterprise. It was established in 1981. They have subsidiaries and associated companies within that group. Cahaya Mata Sarawak is also can be considered a state-owned enterprise.
Actually, most Malaysian companies are state-owned, right?
Yeah.
The banks, the whatever Khazanah owns, IHH, Tenaga, Axiata, Tenaga National
UEM
itself,
Sunrise.
It's a public utility with public agendas, not necessarily profit maximizing all the time. So Sarawak is, I think, it's the same level as Tenaga National, which doesn't supply into East Malaysia.
Well, let's take a look at what it's like to do business in Sarawak. Here's another company with a close link to Sarawak, Sarawak Oil Palms. The COO, Eric Q, was on The Breakfast Grill, and this is what he had to say.
So as far as we're concerned, politics is all about taking care of people. And in Sarawak, the game is played very differently. We don't play the ratio card so heavily. In fact, it's probably not a good idea to do in Sarawak because it doesn't work. I think we've enjoyed a stable state government for many years. And I think we are going to enjoy many years more. And it's because it's in the right hands. So I think that is the important message, that it has to be in the right hands.
So this is a vote of confidence by the COO of Sarawak Oil Palms, Eric Q, saying that the power is in the right hands. He said this before the elections, and now that the post-election saw 9/10 of the seat being offered, actually won by the Sarawak BN, led by Tan Sri Adnan Satim. And I think these state-owned enterprises like Pelita, Cahaya Mata, Sarawak Oil Palms, they are very much in comfort of doing business with the Sarawak government being there in the first place. So I guess Sarawak Energy, it's a very tenuous link, the way I would see it, on establishing them, whether or not they're an SOE of Sarawak otherwise. But they do have a way of doing business in Sarawak, and I think it's great.
Okay, coming up on The Breakfast Grill, that's after the 8 o'clock news bulletin, is Wong Heng Tuck, the CEO of U-Mobile. Stay tuned for that. Coming up next, BFM 89.9. Tesla Motors CEO Elon Musk, he's always known for his for running behind schedule. Now, some people would call this a failure of management, but others reckon that it's just his business strategy. In fact, they call it the Musk Doctrine. So how does it work, actually?
This is really about the old concept of what is a stretch budget. But Elon Musk takes it to a very different level in the sense that he makes it very ambitious and even insane for such requirements to be fulfilled in the short term. For example, that Model 3 that they just launched, which is Tesla's version of a mass market car, you know, his initial production target was 500,000 cars, mm-hmm. 500,000 cars in a span of next 2 years. And so the staff were working in overdrive to come and meet this target. And now they find that, oh, that is within striking range. Mm-hmm. And then he raised that to 1 million cars.
He shifts the goalposts on them.
And, yeah. and it doesn't have an impact on the analysts. In fact, that he really makes them go on a wild goose chase because he gives them all these targets that can't really be fulfilled. So do you call that a disappointment, or do you call that performing in line with expectations?
Okay, right? So I do agree with you. It's a smart move. So he makes these deadline bluffs public, and then he, you know, everyone's expecting them, and then don't you think that people would hold him to account because of that? I mean, in my eyes, would consider that a failure.
Yeah, I think he has that X factor. No matter what he does, people still like him.
You know? There's a hype around
there is,
right?
Yeah, there is even a comparison, right? Between him and Tony Stark of Iron Man.
But that it's not that there is nothing to
you
show.
You watch too much Marvel.
It's not that there is nothing to show for this, because if you aim for 500,000 and you achieve 300,000, 300,000 is still better than zero, right?
Yeah, so, of course.
Which is why I think the market community may be a little bit more forgiving for him. But, you know, going back to our discussion of energy, mm-hmm. one has to ask what exactly is the business of Tesla, because we know they sell cars, but what business is Elon Musk in? Is it cars? Is it power? Is it even space, right? Space travel?
Mm-hmm. SpaceX.
Or is he selling you homes? Because with his battery, efficient energy battery, he's trying to expand this into liberating people in the kind of impact they have on the wallets. It's cheaper right now to own a home because of a Tesla battery.
Whoa. So what do you think, Jules? I mean, if you had to answer your own question, what business is Elon Musk
in? I think he's just in the business of selling imagination.
Ooh, that's a good tagline. Oh, okay.
Speaking of which, he did a cameo in the Iron Man movie.
Oh, my goodness. You've watched that movie
one too many times.
Okay, coming up to 9 o'clock, the opening bell at Bursa Malaysia will give you the numbers in the news bulletin, which is coming up next on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.